I'm Greg Johnson. Welcome to Countercurrents Radio. I'm going to have another conversation today with Hugh MacDonald. This is based actually on a conversation we had quite spontaneously in London earlier this month. We walked around Hyde Park one afternoon, and the topics of vanity, pretentiousness, and snobbery came up. And he had a really challenging take on these things, and it really got me thinking about these topics as well. So anyway, Hugh, welcome to the show, and let's just have a conversation.
Awesome. Thank you. We're thinking about vanity, and the words come to my mind that vanity is a virtue. We typically think of it as something which should be looked down upon and a hated quality. But I think vanity can be a virtue in the sense of, I really think a lot about Jack Donovan's concept of honor, and honor being caring what other people think of you.
Right.
And like caring how you're presented to the world and caring about how you look. And that's a positive thing. That's what it means to have honor, is, you know, appreciating how you're presenting yourself.
Right. And yet vanity is traditionally regarded as a vice, and a lot of people regard it as a vice. So I guess really we need to sort of unravel the sense in which vanity is a good thing and in which vanity is a bad thing, because I'm sure we can all think of bad examples of vanity if we put our minds to it. So what's the difference between good vanity and bad vanity? What's your concept of good vanity? Can you just sort of summarize it in a nutshell?
Well, first let me think about bad vanity. Bad vanity, because I think that would help us define it better. Bad vanity, if you were to look up a definition of vanity, it would say something like caring too much about how you look or how you're presented. And I think anything which is too much by definition is bad. So if you define vanity in that way, you know, it kind of makes it difficult to turn it into a good thing. Caring too much about how you're presented.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. So I'm looking online. Excessive pride in one's appearance, qualities, abilities, achievements, etc. Character or quality of being vain or conceited.
Oh. So calling it excessive, I guess it's kind of checkmate if they say excessive. But then I guess the question is, what is excessive? Like, I can see people saying, if a girl is constantly posting pictures of herself on Instagram of her makeup, or if a guy who's a bodybuilder who's always posting pictures of himself and flexing his muscles, they say, oh, these people, they're so vain. They're always concerned about how they look. But I think that's not necessarily such a bad thing, that the practice of doing those things, because they're both art forms. For a girl who's really concerned about how her makeup looks, first of all, it's art in two ways. It's art in the sense that putting on the makeup in the first place is an art form in and of itself, and then taking the picture of yourself is another layer on top of that. And arguably, even perhaps it's not as in-depth an art form, but the face you make is all, it's like acting.
Oh yeah,
if you think about like kabuki, Japanese theater.
Look, I am the most unphotogenic person in the world. And I know there's an art to being photographed, and I just don't know it. I don't know how to do it. So I always have these horrible expressions or the wrong posture or whatever. So yeah, there's something that people do who are photogenic over and above the fact that they look good, so that they actually take good pictures. I know plenty of photogenic people, and I know unphotogenic people, and if you take objective measurements of their looks and things like that, they might actually be fairly similar, but one person is really, really hated by the camera, and the camera loves the other, so they're doing some, there's some difference there.
Right.
Yeah, there's some factor there. You know, other definitions of vanity are lack of real value, hollowness, worthlessness, and something worthless, trivial, or pointless. So, yeah, it's really being freighted with intrinsically negative aspects. But let's just try and focus on what's positive in vanity. A person trying to make himself or herself beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing wrong with that, as far as I can tell. There's nothing wrong with the attempt to beautify the self to whatever extent that's possible. And if somebody's born beautiful, they can still do things to present themselves well or badly. If some people are born ill-favored, let's say, they can still do something to make themselves look good or not. They can dress well, they can carry themselves well, and so forth. I think that is not objectionable in the least. And we're just talking about appearances. I think it's good to try and be as beautiful, as attractive, as dignified in appearance as possible. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I might even go so far as to say it's our responsibility to do our best to look as presentable, look as good as possible, especially from a collectivist nationalist perspective. I think a lot about when I visit Europe and I see people on the subway and they're so well-dressed compared to Americans and North Americans. I'm in Canada. And I think about how, you know, why is it that Europeans dress so well compared to Americans? And I think part of it is because of, like I talked about this idea of responsibility of presenting yourself well. It's because from a collectivist perspective, you're not just representing yourself as an individual. You're representing your people.
Right.
So there's that weight, there's that responsibility on your shoulders. I think about, you know, why do Europeans dress better? I think it's partly because you have all these European countries which are very small and so close to each other, and it's so easy to travel across borders. If you see a German sitting on a bus and he's poorly dressed, you look at him and you think, oh, Germans, they don't dress very well. Or if you're visiting someone else's country, and you see the way they dress, you can say, oh, those Italians, they don't dress very well. And so it inspires this competitiveness, the competitive feeling between countries that they need to, it's a feeling of national pride. You have to present yourself well.
Right. It forces you to up your game a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think there's some truth to that. And I think that if we are a nationalist movement and we want to promote nationalist values, especially since we are so marginalized in other ways, that we should be attentive to how well we present ourselves. So not only do we have the best arguments, but we put out the best books and the best videos, and we look really cool, and we are just a formidable group of people that should be taken seriously. I think that's something that we should all aspire to.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And even, you know, myself, you know, living in Toronto, which is, the motto of Toronto is diversity, our strength. It's often referred to as the most multicultural city in the world. It's not the most ethnically diverse, but that's just like a piece of propaganda that they say about Toronto, that it's the most multicultural city in the world. And I'm constantly surrounded by people from every other part of the world. And when I see a white person who's poorly dressed, you know, a fellow European, I think, like, what are you doing? You're making us look bad.
You're letting down the team.
You're letting down the team. Like, maybe it's not so unacceptable if you live in, some completely homogenous all-white area, because you're not a representative of your group. People just look at you as an individual. So I think that's part of the reason why people in small towns, they don't dress as well, because they don't have to. They're all just individuals there.
Right.
Whereas when you force people into a multicultural environment, we all become representatives of our group. And so in that sense, it's your responsibility to present yourself well, because it's not just yourself you're representing, it's all of us.
Yeah, that's a good idea. That's I like that. So the good sense of vanity, I think, that we can come up with here is the idea that vanity is praiseworthy, because it's praiseworthy to try and present yourself as well as possible. You should try and look as good as possible. Beauty is a value. Beauty is an objective value, I would say, in the world. And there are things you can do to make yourself more or less beautiful, just as an individual. And yes, there's also this collective dimension to it. We're representing our group, and within our movement, we're representing certain ideas, not just our group. And we should aspire to look good. We should aspire to present ourselves well. And there's nothing wrong with that. I think that's actually good. So why then does vanity have negative traits? Well, one of the ways in which I think vanity has a negative connotation is it's not really talking about vanity so much as failure of vanity or failure to actually make oneself look good. For instance, I think of an example of a woman who has put on a lot of makeup and she looks grotesque. She looks like she's painted up for a kabuki or something like that, you know? There's a line around her face where the skin tone changes because she's painted her face one color and it doesn't blend naturally with the rest of her skin, or she's garish or something like that. And people say, ugh, vanity. Vanity, thy name be woman, or something like that. But really what's being objected to there is not actually her ambition to beautify herself. It's the failure of that ambition. She's failed to beautify herself, and I would go even so far as to say that at the core of the kind of horror there is that we realize that she can't really be objective about her appearance. She's deluded about her appearance. She thinks that looks good, and so there's a sense of falsehood about it. There's a sense of falsehood, and there's a sense of failure. And those are things that I think are built into the negative connotations of vanity. And that's why some of these definitions include that sense. They say lack of real value, hollowness, worthlessness, being trivial or pointless. That's sort of like it was a vain effort, right?
Or to take the Lord's name in vain.
Right, right. The lack of value, the hollowness, the worthlessness aspect of it, I think, is captured when you look at somebody who has failed to beautify himself or herself and actually looks grotesque, and you have a sense that how could they not know this? How could they be so deluded? And so I would say that vanity is not a bad thing if it actually results in the objective beautification of the self, and that the objectionable sense of vanity is simply a failure of real vanity. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And so would that appropriately be referred to as pretentiousness?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. We also got into the question of pretentiousness when we were walking around Hyde Park. Yeah, I think pretentiousness always has a negative connotation too, but I think that one can actually say that there's a positive connotation of pretense. In this sense, if one is trying to say, improve one's tastes or improve one's knowledge. And let's just talk about taste. Vanity has everything to do with the beautification of yourself. Let's just put it that way. And maybe your things, okay? You know, your car is an extension of yourself, your clothes, whatever. But let's talk about your susceptibility to the beauty that's out there in the world. That's what I define taste as. Taste is the faculty of receiving beauty, being receptive to beauty, being able to enjoy beauty. And it's a faculty that can be developed. And because it can be developed and because it requires effort, sometimes you are, in a way, stretching beyond yourself. You're trying to transcend your level of taste at any given time so you can appreciate greater beauty or deeper beauty. And when you're doing that, there's an element of, you can call pretentiousness to that. Because let's say the opera. That's sort of a classic example of something that people think is pretentious, or classical music. That's pretentious. Why do people think that's pretentious? Well, on some level, what they're really saying is that if they went to the opera or they went to a classical concert, they would be pretentious because it's not them, right? It's not the kind of thing they enjoy. They'd feel like they were acting or putting on a show. However, I would argue that no one ever becomes better without, in a sense, pretentiousness, because there's real beauty. There's real value in, say, classical music or opera. And if you're going to appreciate that, you're going to have to stretch yourself. You're going to have to go there. You're going to have to sit there. You're going to have to listen to it. You're going to have to try. And yeah, there's a whole stretch of time where you might feel like a fraud sitting there and clapping and like, I don't know what's going on. You know, I lost track of this. but I'll clap anyway because everybody else is clapping. That kind of thing. You feel like a fraud. But if you do that long enough and you expose yourself to these things of real value, you're not going to be a fraud anymore because you're going to actually come to see real beauty that exists out there, and you're going to have expanded your taste. And so pretentiousness in that sense, I think, can just be defined as a kind of ambition to improve one's tastes, just like vanity can be the ambition to improve one's appearance, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. And so then the question is, what's the bad form of pretentiousness? Well, I think it's probably analogous to the bad form of vanity. A bad kind of pretentiousness would be somebody who is merely pretending all the way through and never is actually growing. They're just engaged in a kind of fraud. And why would they be engaged in this kind of fraud? Well, maybe they're gratifying their need for social approval or something like that. They're pretending to be a connoisseur of something because they're trying to impress other people. There is this friend of mine who is married to a very prominent author. I won't name any names. And anyway, he was a big gourmand. He had a lot of money coming in and he wanted to improve himself. And so he became very pretentious. Okay. He went around attending operas and symphonies and eating in fine restaurants and things like that. And one day somebody fed him some cat food as a pate just to see whether he would spit it out in disgust or whether he'd pretend like it was delicious. I won't even tell what happened. But the point is that would be pretentiousness in the bad sense. If somebody's just pretending to enjoy certain things because they want to fit in with some social set or be thought of as highfalutin and superior and sophisticated.
It sounds like leftists.
Well, yeah. I mean, a lot of these people are that way. And that's one of the things that's so disappointing about the left anymore, because, you know, there used to be leftists who were really principled people, formidable people. They had arguments, they had ideas, they had commitment. And I don't see many people like that anymore, but I see a lot of really hollow people who are just pretending to believe certain things as a way of gaining status within a thoroughly corrupt system. But back to the pretentiousness thing, what's really objectionable about bad pretentiousness is not that it's an attempt to become better than one actually is. It's actually faking it and not really trying to become better, right? So the objectionableness of bad pretentiousness is really the fakery, not the ambition of becoming better.
Sounds like leftists, eh? I guess part of the rejection of pretentiousness is because there's this element of trying to say, I'm better than you, I'm above you. It's almost like a pretentious person is almost to be pretentious is a form of oppression. It's a way of saying I'm above you and you're beneath me.
Right.
Just like a leftist urban elf who gets upset about, if you say, oh, that's so gay, and then they get very excited about it. Oh no, you're not supposed to say that. I'm very offended that you say that. You know, the way leftists pretend to be offended by things, that's pretentiousness. And why are they doing it? Is because it gives them social status. It gives them, puts them in a position of power where they can look down on you and talk down to you.
Right. But is what's offensive about that the fact that they think that they're better, or the fact that they're false, right? You see, I reject egalitarianism. I really do think that some people are better than others. And so I don't have any objection to snobbery. And that's another concept that we talked about. And it's all fits in with this very well. Snobbery. People think that being a snob is a terrible thing, right? Oh, snobs. You know, and they look down upon snobs, which is a kind of snobbery in itself.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, being a snob is looking down on people, thinking you're better than others, thinking certain things are better than others. But if we are anti-egalitarians, then we have to defend snobbery in some sense, because snobbery is just anti-egalitarianism in practice. Mm-hmm. If you are an anti-egalitarian, there are certain things that you won't do. There are certain things you won't eat. There are certain places you won't be. There are certain people you will not associate with. And to do so is to lower yourself, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that if there are real hierarchies of value, then snobbery is an absolutely important thing, because it's a manifestation of seeing those real hierarchies in value. Mm-hmm. And again, the objectionable sense of snobbery for me, I think, is not that people are making distinctions of quality, but that they're making distinctions of quality based on false criteria, right? Mm-hmm. So if a person thinks that he's better than somebody else just because he makes more money, or because he's got the latest iPhone, or, you know, her shoes are so 2013, or that kind of stuff, I look down on that. That's false snobbery. That's fake snobbery, or merely conventional snobbery. There are all kinds of distinctions of quality that people make in the world based on, say, being up to date and being fashionable and so forth, that don't necessarily track real distinctions of quality in the world. And if people get their sense of worth caught up in false criteria of quality, then they're snobs in the bad sense. But again, what's objectionable is not making distinctions of quality. The objectionable thing is making distinctions of quality based on false criteria.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I mean, I think there's a danger on the right when we look at liberals and we look at leftists and we see how pretentious they are, how snobbish they are, how elitist they are, to think, oh, well, you know, we're populists. We're against pretentiousness and snobbery and elitism. We're just all a bunch of slovenly bozos here. And we shouldn't do that. We shouldn't do that, because what's really objectionable is not aspirations to be beautiful, or aspirations to have, you know, better taste, or aspirations to make real distinctions of quality. What's objectionable is making those on false criteria, false premises. Yeah. What's objectionable about the left is not that they're elitist, but that their elitism is based on false criteria. And it's also sort of false to itself, because they claim that they're anti-elitist and that they're egalitarian.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a kind of bad faith there. There's a hypocrisy there.
Right. Yeah, I guess elitism is the positive way of saying pretentiousness. Elitism is a positive quality. Well, I mean, if you're a rightist, elitism is a positive quality.
Yeah.
I remember I first started realizing that I was an elitist when I would wake up at 5:30 in the morning to go to the university swimming pool and then swim every morning. And I'd always feel proud. I'd feel better than people when I was the first person at the pool.
Right.
And again, because it made me feel like I'm tougher, and that I'm stronger, and that I'm more disciplined. And as people would slowly trickle into the pool, I'd look down on them, and I'd think, you know, I'm better than you, because I'm more disciplined than you. I woke up earlier than you. You know, I took the harder path than you did.
Right.
And that's what it means to be better. And then some days I'd accidentally sleep in, or the worst thing, I guess the really bad thing, is when you choose to sleep in. You make the decision to sleep in, and then I arrive at the pool a little later, and people are already there, and I just hate myself for it. I feel like, oh, I'm not as disciplined today. There are people who are better than me today. Right. And that's when I first started thinking about elitism. And, oh, yeah, I guess I'm an elitist. If you can think that you're better than people, or realize that people are better than you, and look down on people for their weaknesses. And I think it's interesting. Being an elitist, it reinforces itself. You become better by being an elitist. You come to value strengths more, and you look down on weaknesses more. You know, the reason why I'd look down on those people who come in late to the pool is because I see in them the weakness that I see in myself.
Exactly. The core of elitism, and I think the thing that makes it justified, if you will, is that the true elitist is really hardest on himself.
When you
despise your own weakness, you despise your own laziness, you despise your own lack of knowledge, you are a tough critic of your own performance and things like that. And because of that, you feel licensed to be similar with others.
Right. Right.
To be critical of others too.
Right. And on an outward level, it can appear like it's hatred of that external individual. But on a deeper level, it's not really hatred of that individual. It's a hatred of the weaknesses in that individual. And on an even deeper level, that's really the hatred of your own weaknesses.
Right.
Like, I can see that if you see this other guy who woke up late that morning, and you look at him and you think, oh, it's disgusting. I hate the weakness that I see in you. It's because really you're aware of that weakness in yourself. It's like, it sounds like a Buddhist expression. Maybe it is, that the world that we perceive is a reflection of ourselves.
Right.
Right. Elitism makes you better because it makes you strive to be strong, and it makes you hate weakness in yourself, and you hate weakness around you. And so that's not pretentiousness, because it's not fake.
Yeah, or you can say that it's pretentiousness in the good sense. Pretense has a sense of acting, right? But there is a sense in which self-improvement involves acting. For instance, when you are learning how to play the piano, or you're learning to have certain virtues. Aristotle talks about it this way. And this is actually the best example from Aristotle. The way to acquire virtues is to act virtuous, right? To do the sorts of things that virtuous men do. But one is not yet virtuous. One is just imitating virtuous people. One's being pretentious, in other words, right? But there comes a point where if you practice long enough, it doesn't just become a kind of mechanical imitation of some exemplar. It becomes second nature. It becomes you, right? It sinks in and dyes the very fabric of your soul. It becomes deeply habituated rather than something that's just superficial that you're going through the motions of. And that's true with playing the piano or learning any other kind of skill. At first, there's a kind of mechanicalness to it where you're just sort of going through the motions. You're imitating others. And then, at a certain point, when it becomes fully internalized, suddenly the performance is coming from within you rather than coming from you watching somebody else and going along, you know, sort of following along with what they're doing. And at that point, you have become the person that you were pretending to be. And I think that kind of aspect of pretentiousness is just a normal part of moral education or practical education, of improving one's tastes. It's part of education, very broadly speaking. And what's bad about pretentiousness is that a person might never go beyond that. They might always just be acting or always just be imitating. It's never become fully internalized. It's never become really them. It's just a kind of inauthentic copying or mimicking or performance, perhaps because it doesn't matter to them to be real. And this, I think, gets into a whole dimension of psychology that's really interesting and kind of perilous too, which is discussing things like narcissism. When people talk about vanity, another term that they'll use is narcissism, right? So-and-so is very narcissistic. Again, I think there's a certain sense of narcissism that's not a bad thing. The myth of Narcissus is that he's captivated by his own reflection in the water, and he basically exists as a prisoner of his own image reflected in something external. Now, that is a bad situation. That is to be empty in some sense. And the bad sense of narcissism, as I understand it, is when you've got a person whose sense of worth is entirely dependent upon how he or she is perceived by others, such that it's just good enough to manipulate how others perceive you in order for you to feel good about yourself. So a narcissistic person doesn't necessarily have to be virtuous, doesn't necessarily have to have good taste, doesn't necessarily have to be anything. They just have to seem that way well enough that others think they're that way. And then they derive a kind of gratification from the feelings that others, from basically the reflection of themselves in the eyes of others, right? And what's objectionable about that, again, I think, is that there's an inauthenticity, there's an unrealness about it. The narcissist isn't necessarily really a good person or really a smart person or really an accomplished person. Their primary concern is to be seen that way. Mm-hmm. And so what they end up doing is they end up manipulating other people, defrauding other people of esteem, basically. They get esteemed for things that they're not. And to do that, they have to manipulate how other people think. And so it's a kind of parasitic, manipulative relationship. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, that's a really negative and dangerous thing. But there's another sense in which people talk about narcissism as just self-love, right? A certain amount of that, I think, is crucial. You know, a certain amount of self-worth, however you want to put it, that's crucial. But then there's this sense of narcissism as basically being empty and unreal as a human being,
mm-hmm.
and living in the perceptions of others, so mm-hmm. that you're false and manipulative and dependent upon others. I mean, but at the same time, it's possible for there to be an element of narcissism, if you will, an element of imitation, an element of acting, an element of playing to the crowd, in the process of growth, in the process of maturation, right?
Mm.
Boys want to be like their dads. Women, girls want to be like their moms. You want to have certain features of the people that you respect. You want to internalize those features. And so there's a great deal of development, psychological development, that just works through the process of imitating others,
mm-hmm.
right? And how do you know you're doing a good job? Well, they tell you you're doing a good job. And so you're imitating others in order to gain their accolades, in order to gain their praise. The problem, though, is when you never get beyond that and it never becomes authentic, it never becomes you, it never becomes real. So you're always just acting, you're always just playing a game. And then beyond that, there are the people who basically, their whole life is sort of involved in just manipulating others so that they praise you or they think well of you. They give you things. And that's a kind of fraudulent existence. And it's a bad existence because, A, it doesn't require you to be real, to have real virtues and talents, right? And it also makes you entirely dependent on others and manipulative of others, rather than being somewhat psychologically independent and capable of grappling with the problems of life on your own.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, Rousseau, in his book Emile, and in his discourses, the discourse on arts and sciences and the discourses on the origins of inequality, he talks about the main problem of civilization, and the term that he uses for it is vanity. And so he has a very negative sense of vanity, and it's all basically caught up with this kind of narcissistic manipulation of others in order to gain esteem and status. And he thinks that really this is at the root of human inequality, in the bad sense of human inequality, human unhappiness, tyranny and domination and so forth in society. So he thinks it's really the root of all social evils. But he thinks that the solution to these social evils is self-love. So he makes a contrast between vanity and self-love. And he thinks that self-love is grounded ultimately in a sense of being able to master the challenges of life, whereas vanity is ultimately haunted by a kind of emptiness and a kind of dependency upon other people, so that the man with self-love has the power to conquer nature and control nature, whereas the man who lacks self-love and whose life is caught up in vanity lacks the power to conquer nature and therefore has to conquer other people or manipulate other people in order to deal with the problems of life, right? Mm-hmm. And he wrote this book, A Meal, or On Education, basically because he was trying to figure out how it is that vanity becomes a problem. And he thinks that it becomes a problem because of maleducation, starting from the very earliest phases of life. I mean, that's the theory that he tries to put forward. And he tries to put forward an alternative scheme of education that allows people to gain self-worth, self-love, rather than vanity. And the aim of it is to create a society of people who are self-actualized, self-confident, not psychologically dependent and manipulative. So it's a society of sort of autonomous adults who are capable of non-manipulative, non-dependent relationships with one another.
Mm-hmm.
And he also says that the product of this education would basically be a kind of Übermensch. Of course, he doesn't use that term. And that a few people like this, a few people with this sort of education where they have self-love but lack vanity, and therefore they have strength, they have real strength rather than weakness, that a few people like this could smash the world. I always thought that was a very kind of chilling and powerful idea. He really was trying to create an education of an Übermensch, a kind of person who could revolutionize and overturn a society of weak, manipulative, vain, dependent, narcissistic people.
Mm-hmm. To aspire to be good and to aspire to make yourself better, that's a positive quality.
I would say so, yeah.
And to care what other people think of you, that's also a positive quality. Like, that's also a healthy thing, because it encourages you to improve.
Yes.
But if you have that care without the actual self-improvement, that's when it becomes unhealthy. If you care to present yourself as something that you're not, as a form of lying, that's the bad thing.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm. There's a sense in which honor is a good thing. What is an honorable man? He's a person who is concerned about his reputation, for instance.
Oh, and the reputation of his people.
Exactly, because he's not just an island. He's not just an individual. Yeah.
Right. That's how Donovan in The Way of Men frames honor. His honor is important because you are a representative of your group, and if you're acting like a fool, you're making everyone else in the group, you're making your whole tribe appear weak.
Yeah, and it's not just appear weak, although that's part of it. It's to make them weak, right? And that's really the most pressing concern. I mean, we want appearances and concern with appearances to ultimately track what's real. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you behave in a bad way, if you're the kind of person who's flagrantly unconcerned with honor, if you're the sort of person who doesn't care about his reputation, if you're the sort of person who therefore breaks promises or speaks right in a impulsive way or just does dumb stuff, right? Mm-hmm. That doesn't just make your group look bad. That makes your group weak.
It makes your group bad.
It makes your group bad.
It doesn't just make you look bad. It makes you bad.
Yeah. Looking bad is the alarm bell, I guess. You know, that's what we see. Yep. But the real concern is actually making us be bad. And there might be some times when, you know, you have to be unconcerned with looking bad in order to be strong. Can you think of examples where you might have to look bad in order to be strong or be effective?
There's this idea of it can be empowering to make it appear as if you don't care what people think of you.
Yeah.
And you can deliberately kind of force that appearance. Like, you want people to believe that you don't care what they think, because if you don't care what they think of you, then they don't have power over you.
Yes.
You're stronger if you genuinely don't care what they think of you. So it's to your advantage to at least appear like you don't care. In public spaces, I've heard this many times, people will say, will be very vocal about saying, I don't care what anyone thinks of me. Like, I just don't care what people think. But if they honestly didn't care what other people thought of them, then why would they bother to vocalize that idea in the first place?
That's a very good point.
People tell you that they don't care what you think of them because they really care. They care that you know that. Because it's an empowering thing for them. If someone else cares what I think of him, then I have power over him.
Right.
Because I've got some pull.
Right.
Know, if he fears my judgment.
Right.
So it's important at least to present yourself as if you don't care, while secretly caring. You obviously really care.
Right.
Which is why you do your best to appear that you don't care.
Right, right. Vanity, being too concerned with what other people think of you, to me comes off as weakness. Now, you don't want to be, however, so strong that you don't really care at all what anybody thinks of you, right? Because then you're a kind of autistic person. Like Aristotle's God, who's sort of autistic. Aristotle has this notion of God as totally self-absorbed and uninterested in anything else. Totally self-contained, right? Mm-hmm. Now, the Taoists have this idea of the sage is sort of like that as well. And as the emperor is like that, he's sort of self-contained in a way. And he doesn't even need to act because others are just sort of drawn to him. Now, there's something real about that. There's something deep and true and powerful about that. And I think that really psychologically strong and healthy people do have a kind of self-containedness and aloofness about them that makes them very charismatic. Okay? However, if they were entirely that way, they wouldn't be human, even. But, you know, if you're a person of real quality, then you can't really seriously care about what everybody thinks of you. Mm. Just anybody, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because most people, they don't even have the criteria to judge.
Right.
I mean, right. You know, if you are a skilled performer of the violin, or if you are a physicist, if you're somebody who does something that is very, very difficult and very, very hard to appreciate, the number of people whose opinions really matter to you has to be pretty small. You're only going to be really concerned with the opinions of your peers, the people who are in your class. And so, you know, there might be people who are superlative individuals, extremely strong people, extremely self-contained people, and they might look like they don't give a shit about what anybody thinks.
Mm-hmm.
But they're still human, and they still care about the opinions of, let's call it, the significant others, right? The people who matter to them. The opinions mm-hmm. of the people who matter to them a great deal. And if they didn't, they wouldn't even be human, right?
Mm-hmm.
They'd be on mm-hmm. an entirely different plane of existence. So yeah, and I do think that in a way, when you believe in hierarchy, when you believe in inequality, then you're going to naturally and necessarily believe that there will be certain people who are so advanced that they don't really care about the opinions of most people. And therefore, they are going to have this quality of aloofness and self-containedness that can be extremely attractive, extremely charismatic. Yet, because they're human, and because there are other people on their level, it might be lonely at the top, but there's still other people at the top. They do have peers, and the opinions of their peers do matter to them. It's just that the opinions of everybody doesn't necessarily matter. Now, of course, no matter how important you are or how accomplished you are or whatever, you're still a human being. You still put your pants on one leg at a time or whatever. And so on some level, there's going to be a sense in which anybody can judge you. And on those levels where anybody can judge you, then their opinions will matter. You know, you might be the hottest guy in town. You might be the smartest guy in town. You might be really up there. But if you get out of the car and slip and fall in the mud, you're going to look bad to anybody. And you're going to feel embarrassed no matter who sees you. Because there's certain levels on which we're all the same, basically. But still, on some level, I think, certain moral levels, intellectual levels, aesthetic, scientific, whatever higher levels of achievement, the opinions of others that really matter to you become very rarefied, and the numbers of people who really matter become very, very small. And therefore, you seem sort of godlike and distant to a lot of people. Does that make sense? It's fashionable for people to say, I don't care what other people think of me. That fits in with the sort of corrosive individualism in our culture. However, if people really don't care what other people think of you, they're almost kind of dangerous. They're not quite human in that sense. That's something to be concerned about.
Especially if they're an ally.
Yeah.
Especially if they're part of the same group.
Right.
If someone's weaker than you, then it doesn't matter what they think, because they're of no threat to you.
Right.
Like that's the real importance of caring what other people think. Is you know, if someone is potentially threatening, then you want to appear strong to them. You want to appear like you could resist them if they were to attack you.
Right.
Whereas if they're weak, you know, even if you appear yourself weak, you still feel like you come across as stronger than them, and they won't attack you.
Right.
Yeah. And I've more thoughts about the concept of vanity.
Sure.
I've been thinking a lot about what does it mean to be civilized. And if you think about, you know, an uncivilized people, you think about like Africans, sub-Saharan Africans, and how for thousands of years they didn't really create very much. Whereas you compare them to a civilized people, you look at Europeans and, you know, look at all that we did, our music, our philosophy, our buildings, our architecture, our science, our government, all of these things. We created so much. That's really the distinguishing thing between being a civilized people and an uncivilized people is creation. And that's connected to the idea of vanity in the sense of fashion is a form of creation. A woman's makeup is a form of creation. I guess even bodybuilding is a form of creation. And that's so there will be people who look down on vanity, but I say no, vanity is a positive quality because it's a form of being civilized. It's a form of cultivating yourself. It's a form of carving your existence into a form of self-expression. It's a form of making your existence a form of self-expression. Carving every atom of your being into something. That's what a civilized person does. That's part of what it means to be civilized, is to make things, constantly making things, constantly creating things, constantly making art. Art understood as that through which one can express himself.
The most pretentious thing possible is to be civilized. Every generation, I think Thomas Sowell said this. I wish I said it, but I think it actually came from Thomas Sowell. He said that every new generation is an invasion of barbarians. And you've got to civilize them or they'll destroy your society. To a barbarian, There's nothing more pretentious than being civilized, right? And so, and how does mankind, how have our people raised ourselves above barbarism? Well, it's a pretense, if you will. Not an empty pretense, but an earnest pretense. An earnest pretense to improve oneself.
Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, to be vain, to take the time to very consciously present your haircut or the clothing that you wear, these are like fashion is a form of culture. And your hairstyle is a form of culture, and the way you speak even is a form of self-expression, and that's part of what it means to be cultured and to be civilized, which is an important part of what it means to be a European.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Most of our people don't know it yet, but our people are in an ethnic struggle for their very existence.
Mm-hmm.
And those of us who are self-conscious of that existential threat, we need to really be at our best. We need to live up to the ambition that we set for ourselves, which is to be the people who preserve and carry forward civilization. That's a big task.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The war that we're fighting is a culture war. Our cultural landscape is a battlefield. And so every act, every cultural gesture, the clothing that you wear, the way you cut your hair, the style in which you build your home, how you decorate your home, all these forms of self-expression, the music that you make, the art that you paint, these aren't just, this isn't just window dressing. This is an act of war. This is a rejection, an expression of our European identity and our rejection of multiculturalism. Very consciously dressing in a traditional European style, you know, wearing a European suit. Or cutting your hair in the fascist style.
Right.
You know? They're an expression of our European identity, an act of war, a gesture of our rebellion and rejection of multiculturalism and celebration and embrace of our European identity, our European culture. And that's vanity, you know, being very conscious about these things and how other people perceive you and how you are presented. And so in that sense, vanity is a virtue. Vanity is a positive quality.
Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah.
And at the same time, we have to be aware that the negative sense of vanity makes us weak, but the positive sense of vanity is at the core of what makes us strong and how we become stronger and better.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the left, they don't poo-poo the idea that art and fashion and everything is connected with politics. Our people tend to poo-poo those ideas.
Right.
It's part of this kind of reactionary populism that a lot of our people just sort of fumble into, because they really are just reacting against something they dislike about the left, and therefore they want to negate it, right?
Mm-hmm.
They think that, oh, these people are horrible elitists, so we're going to be somehow democratic and ordinary Joes. But ordinary Joes don't beat elites. You
That's
know,
right.
Elites beat elites. And
That's right.
We have to be a better elite than they are. That's the only way we're going to win.
Right.
But they don't dismiss the political nature, the inherently political nature of every aesthetic gesture, every bit of fashion, every bit of art. And we need to see things in the same way. They're right. Everything is politicized in that sense. And the reason why they promote ugly hairstyles and ugly clothes and ugly music is an attack on us. When people present horrible, ugly music as great art, we should regard that with the horror and the sense of existential threat that we would regard somebody who throws acid in the face of a beautiful woman.
Mm.
It's the same malice. It's the same evil.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
One of the problems, the flip side of having taste, is that it makes it difficult to enjoy a lot of things. You know, it's like, oh God, I can't listen to this kind of singing, this kind of vocalizing anymore. It's not singing, it's horrible. But on the other hand, it does sensitize you to things that are threats and meant as threats to our identity.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that we all have to become more sensitive to that because we really are under threat. And the threat, it comes in all directions.
I can think of clear examples of degenerate art when it comes to film, especially films like what comes to mind is like Bridesmaids, or I saw the movie The Kingsman recently, which was a clear celebration of degeneracy. But anyway, that would be cool to have a whole separate podcast talking about degenerate art and versus quality art.
Yeah, that would be a really entertaining and interesting thing to dig into. Well, Hugh, we've been going on for about an hour now, and I really feel like this is becoming clearer to me. I do think that there really are defensible senses of vanity, pretentiousness, and snobbery, which are terms that are used as pejorative terms quite widely. And that I also think that we really do need to defend these things because as European nationalists, we are anti-egalitarians. And really, to defend inequality, to defend the idea that there are real distinctions of quality in the world, we have to defend snobbery, which is the ability to distinguish between real levels of quality. And we have to distinguish between a good and a bad sense of pretentiousness. I think good pretentiousness really is the ambition to improve oneself. And like you were saying, vanity, the good sense of vanity is an aspiration to improve oneself specifically in terms of one's beauty. And these are all things that we really do stand for and believe in. So anyway, I think this is really valuable. I think it's probably very valuable for our listeners. So let's definitely do this again soon.
All right. Sounds good.